Yashodanandana Brajajana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Vurudhari. Jaya Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Vurudhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Vishnupada Paramahansa Vadi Virajika Acharya Stuttarasta Shri Shimad His Divine Grace Adesi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Ah, grace to the assembled devotees. Ah, grace to the assembled devotees. Ah, grace to the assembled devotees. Ah, grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Madhyasya yatun vayari taratas chate shubhigya swara. Tene brahma ridaya adikavaye muyanti yatsuraya. Tejo vari mridam yata vinimayo yatra trisargo mrisha dhamna svena sada nirastu kuhakam satyam parandi mahi. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 22, The Marriage of Karma Muni and Devahuti. Text number 8. Word meanings, saha, yourself, bhavan, your honor, duhitri sneha, by affection for my daughter, Parikrishta Atmanaha, whose mind is agitated, Mama, my, Shrotum, to listen, Arhasi, be pleased, Dinasya, of my humble self, Shravitam, to the prayer, Kripaya, graciously, Mune, O sage. So Swami Bhuva Manu is speaking to Karma Muni. Sabhavandu Hitrishneha Pariklishtat Mano Mama Srotumarhasi Dinasya Shravitam Kripaya Mune Svabhavandhu Hitrishneha Parikrishtat Mano Mama Srotumarhasi Dinasya Shravitam Kripaya Mune Svabhavandhu Hitrishneha Parikrishtat Mano Mama Srotumarhasi Dinasya Sravitam Kripaya Mune Svabhavandhu Hitrishneha Parikrishtat Mano Mama Srotumarhasi Dinasya Kavitam Kripaya Mune Svabhavandhu Hitrishneha Parikrishtat Mano Mama Srotum Arhasi Dinasya Sravitam Kripaya Mune Svabhavandhu Hitrishneha Parikrishtat Mano Mama Srotumarhasi Dinasya Sravitam Kripaya Mune Svabhavandhu Hitrishneha Parikrishtat Mano Mana Srotumarhasi Dinasya Sravitam Kripaya Mune Translation, O great sage, graciously be pleased to listen to the prayer of my humble self, for my mind is troubled by affection for my daughter. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When a disciple is perfectly in consonance with the spiritual master, having received his message and executed it perfectly and sincerely, he has a right to ask a particular favor from the spiritual master. Generally, a pure devotee of the Lord or a pure disciple of a bona fide spiritual master does not ask any favor either from the Lord or the spiritual master. But even if there is a need to ask a favor from the spiritual master, one cannot ask that favor without satisfying him fully. Swayambhuva Manu wanted to disclose his mind regarding the function he wanted to execute due to affection for his daughter. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam mena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So as we read the Bhagavatam and read Prabhupada's books over the years, we should start learning the meaning of some of the words naturally, right? I'm finding more and more when I read verses that, oh, I know that word, I know that word, I know that word. Of course, I don't know the grammar, so I couldn't translate it, but like Bhavan, this is very common, Bhavan, your good self. This comes up throughout the Bhagavatam when someone is addressing someone else. Your good self, or dear sir, or that kind of thing. It's a form of address. Sneha. Sneha is affection. Prabhupada explains it in one place. Sneha is the affection of a superior to a subordinate. It's like the flow that goes down. So sneha is a flowing affection that goes to someone subordinate to you. So he's talking about his sneha for his daughter. And so anyway, there are other things. Dina, so everyone should know what Dina means, right? Fallen. Here it's translated as humble. My humble self. Kripaya, mercy, mune, O sage. So a lot of words. Mama, my. Yeah. So Swayambhu Manu, he's come to bring his daughter, to offer his daughter in marriage to Karma Muni. And he's saying, I have a favor to ask of you. The favor is you accept my daughter because I'm offering her to you. And graciously be pleased to listen. So I'm making a request to you. Now, Prabhupada, the point that Prabhupada makes in this purport, as far as I know, I can't think of any other place where Prabhupada makes this point, anywhere in his books. When a disciple is in consonance with the spiritual master, he has a right to ask a particular favor from the spiritual master. So I was trying, does this come up anywhere else? I don't know. But, in other words, Prabhupada making this particular point. As far as I can think, I can't think of any other place. Now, so many things Prabhupada said over and over and over again, hundreds, thousands of times. But as far as I can think in my vacant mind, I can't think of any other place where Prabhupada makes this point. So it's a little hard to elaborate on it. you have the right to ask the spiritual master for a favor. The first thing that came to my mind when I read this was, Prabhupada himself said, I only ask my spiritual master one question, how can I serve you? He never asked for any reciprocation, you might say, from the spiritual master. So I was thinking, at least there are a lot of, we have different kinds of exchanges, and there are many things that take place in the Bhagavatam in the context of a relationship between the spiritual master and the disciple, or also to extend that further in the context of the relationship between the devotee and Krishna. There's some interaction between the superior and the subordinate. So I'm going to talk somewhat about, broaden the scope a little bit of this particular point. I wanted to start with something. I just came across this. I was doing some research, and I was looking at the Bhaktivinoda Thakur's, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote many songs. We know he wrote many songs, and he has different, now they're put together in different books. I assume maybe they were originally too. But like we had the Gitavali and Sharanagati. So Kalyana Kalpa Thru is another one of those books. So I was reading that the other day, and I came across this, which I thought was quite interesting. And there's some introduction. It's a Bengali. It's written in Bengali verse, meant to be sung, actually. But then I came across this. I thought it was interesting. This is just as he's beginning the actual series of the songs. This is his introduction to it. Diksha Guru Kripa Kori Mantra Upadesh Koriya Dekan Krishna Tatvir Nirdesh. The initiating spiritual master shows his causeless mercy by giving his disciples instructions in chanting the Harinam mantra. By so doing, he points the disciples towards the direction of the truths pertaining to the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. Then he says, Siksha Guru Brinda Kripa. Koriya Apar. Sadake Shikhan Sadhaner Angasar. But I consider the numerous instructing spiritual masters to be more important, for they show unlimitedly more mercy by training the neophyte devotees in all the essential aspects of practical regulative devotional service, sadhana bhakti. Then Siksha Guru Gunapade Koriya Pranati Upadesha Mala Boli Nija Mana Prati. Therefore, offering my prostrated obeisances unto the lotus feet of all instructing spiritual masters, I will now narrate this garland of different types of spiritual advice, which will all be directed toward my own mind. So it's interesting how he's really glorifying the Siksha Guru. I was thinking, this reminded me, a couple of years ago, I was giving a Sunday feast lecture, and in the question part, one devotee asked something about how, I think I misunderstood the question, which often happens later, I was thinking about it more. But he was asking how, because in that verse, of course, we're all singing the Srila Prabhupada, and it says, Janme Janme Prabhu Se, he is my Lord birth after birth. So if you're not a disciple of Prabhupada, you may think, well, does this apply to me or what? First of all, of course, these songs that we sing, they're not necessarily written for everyone. You might say when the devotee wrote it, Narottam Das Thakur, he's writing to his spiritual master, Lokanath Goswami, and he's saying, you're my Lord, birth after birth. But now, of course, we say the song, we say the English, and we sing it, and we say to Srila Prabhupada, you're my Lord, birth after birth. So it seemed like the devotee's question was, it's probably my Lord, he's not my Diksha Guru, so does this really apply? So I was thinking of this, I guess my answer would have been if I had thought about it. Well, what does it say? It says, Janme Janme Prabhu say, you're my Prabhu. So we're always going to be, Prabhupada is always going to be our Prabhu. Whether he's our Diksha Guru or not, he's always going to be in that superior position lifetime after lifetime. We don't have it in our mind, you know, in some future birth, maybe Prabhupada's going to be my disciple. No, the disciple would never think that way. For eternity, this is the relationship. He's the superior and I'm the subordinate. So I was thinking that's a kind of meditation we can have, you know, Prabhupada is, going back to what I first read, Prabhupada is the Siksha Guru, the paramount Siksha Guru of everyone who's following in his line. So he's certainly life after life, he's going to be in that position. So I'm going to read a few things here and make some comments about them. This is from a purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 488. It says, the great sage, this is Srila Prabhupada speaking, or writing. The great sage Maitreya wanted to describe the pious activities of the kings. Priyavrata was the first son of Swayambhuva Manu, and Atanapad was the second. But the great sage Maitreya immediately began to speak of Dhruva Maharaj, the son of Atanapad, because Maitreya was very eager to describe pious activities. Now, one way reading into this a little bit is that Maitreya wanted to describe pious activity because he was inspired by his disciple. His disciple have not asked him directly, can you tell me about Dhruva Maharaj? But he was thinking, I'd like to speak about Dhruva Maharaj right away, because this would be very beneficial for my disciple to hear this. And there are different places in the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya, where Maitreya, first of all, Vidura asks lots of questions. And Maitreya, he says, you're a very surrendered disciple, essentially. And I'm very pleased to speak to you, to answer these questions that you have. So this basically ties into this purport today. But one reason this caught my attention actually was a completely different reason, which isn't exactly related to this point. But for a long time, I've been wondering if in the Bhagavatam in the fourth canto, now of course, the Bhagavatam, I often mention that a lot, there's a certain overall structure which has to do with genealogy. This person that had this son and his son was so and so, you know, so on. So it starts actually with Lord Brahma, of course, in the creation. But then when you hear about Manu and you have a lot of the early cantos, well, actually pretty much all the way up to the 10th canto, it's about the descendants of Manu Maharaj, especially third, fourth, and fifth cantos. They come in that context. So I always wonder, because first the story, the two sons of Swayambhuva Manu are Priyavrata and Utanapad. So Priyavrata... Am I getting it right? Priyavrata and Utanapad. So Prithu Maharaj, he comes in the line of Uttanapada. Like here he's saying, first he's going to talk about Uttanapada and his descendants. So Uttanapada's son, of course, is Dhruva Maharaj. And a few generations after Dhruva Maharaj, I forget what it is, half a dozen, something like that, then you get Prithu Maharaj. So in the whole story of Prithu Maharaj, you hear about him interacting with Mother Earth and how he flattened the earth and all these things. So I was thinking, so then after we hear about so many of his descendants, then we hear about King Uttanapada, his brother. Then we hear about Priyavrata, his brother Priyavrata. So what does Priyavrata do? He drives his chariot around Mount Meru and creates the dwipas. You know, he creates all these islands and the oceans. So I was always thinking, well, Prithu Maharaj do what he did before Priyavrata appeared on the scene? Before there was even an earth, he did all these things with the earth? So this answers my question, actually. It's because it was the order was actually different. First Priyavrata ruled, and then Uttanapada ruled. But the reason they're out of order is because Maitreya was inspired to talk about Dhruva Maharaj, who comes directly, of course, Uttanapada and Dhruva Maharaj, his son. So that was the context of Prabhupada saying this here. I was like, oh, I finally got that resolved. I was always trying to figure out how Prithu Maharaj could do all he did before the earth was even created. So it's because the chronology is not right in the Bhagavatam. So that's one little exchange between Maitreya is inspired by Vidura, and he's starting to speak right away because he wants to talk about Dhruva Maharaj. No, I think there's a little more about Dhruva Maharaj, some other notes I have here. Now, right in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, of course, we hear about Suta Goswami is introduced. After some introductory verses, we hear about the sages doing a sacrifice, and they're glorifying Suta Goswami. This is text 8 of the first chapter, first canto. And because you are submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all the favors bestowed upon a gentle disciple. Therefore, you can tell us all that you have scientifically learned from them. So this is really pointing out how, because Suta was such a good disciple, then he was empowered by his guru or gurus, spiritual masters here, it's in the plural, to be able to transmit the messages of the Puranas. Now, connected with that, this comes up in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. It's there. Actually, the chapter is the Puran, something about the Puranas. I forget the exact title, but it has to do with the Puranas. It's chapter 7 of the 12th canto. So there's a discussion there about the Puranas. So here, it's interesting. I just started reading the 12th canto last night. The first chapter, it's all these descendants, it's the long genealogy, all these kings. I never heard any of their names practically, because many of them are in the future, or at least they're coming after Shukadeva Goswami and Pariksit Maharaj. So there also, when there talks about the Puranas, this comes up. Trayaruni, Kasyapa, Savarni, Akritavrana, Vaishampayana, and Harita are the six masters of the Puranas. So a few of those names ring a bell there. So that's 12.7.5. And then the next one, each of them studied one of the six anthologies of the Puranas from my father, Romaharshan. So Suta Goswami is speaking here, who was a disciple of Srila Vyasadeva. I became the disciple of these six authorities and thoroughly learned all their presentations of Puranic wisdom. So another thing, Shonaka Rishi and the sages, they're glorifying Suta Goswami as being so knowledgeable. He says, you know all these different shastras. So this explains it. There are these six masters of the Puranas, and he directly studied under them. He said, I learned all their presentations of Puranic wisdom. Because at this Naimisharanya, not only did Suta Goswami speak the Bhagavatam, but he spoke other Puranas as well. Just imagine knowing all that. I mean, just to know the Bhagavat Purana, then you recite all the other ones too. Some of them are really huge. I think the Skanda is 55,000 or some incredible number of verses. There are a lot of quotes from the Skanda Purana. Actually, I'll throw this in. I was thinking of mentioning it later because I was going to say something about Prahlad. But Prahlad's spiritual master, of course, is Narada Muni. Someone asked me recently some question about Narada Muni, because Narada Muni is very mysterious, who he is eternally, and is he Nitya Siddha, is he Sadhana Siddha? One purport Prabhupada says he's both, but he doesn't really elaborate on what it means. So I was thinking, because we had the story the way it's presented in the Bhagavatam, he was just an ordinary person, you might say, and he attained perfection and got a spiritual body and became Narada Muni. But I'm thinking, I can't imagine that Narada Muni isn't eternally an associate of Krishna. It's just hard to accept such, you know, that doesn't seem to be right. So I was reading in the Krishna Sandarbha, there's Jiva Goswami quotes a verse from the Skanda Purana where Narada Muni is glorifying Lord Krishna in Krishna's abode. And he mentions, he says, and you are there in that eternal abode, and I am also there. So I said, all right. Narada Muni is eternally in Vrindavan. Now, one thing we hear from, I don't know who else says it, but Jiva Goswami, I'm pretty sure in Gopal Champu, he says that Madhu Mangal is Narada Muni, or Narada Muni is Madhu Mangal. So that's another, that may be an explanation for why this Skanda Purana, where Narada Muni is saying, I'm also there. We also know he has a gopi form. We had an article in BTG not too long ago about Narada's eternal home in Vrindavan, where at some point he took on a gopi form. So he's there living eternally in a gopi form in Vrindavan. So anyway, a little off the point there. So we'll get back. Here's another quote. Okay, let's see. After hearing Maharaj Parikshit's very intelligent question, Shukadev Goswami, the most powerful sage, began answering his disciple with great affection. So this is just a night. We have so much, you know, the exchanges between, it's a theme that runs throughout the Bhagavatam, of course, Shukadev Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. And we hear how they praising each other. Maharaj Parikshit is always, you know, he's always encouraging him to go on, just keep delivering the nectar, I'm drinking this, I'm, because of what you're saying, I'm not even hungry or thirsty. I'm just so absorbed in what you're saying, you know, that I'm not even thinking about my body. Actually, this idea of complete absorption in the moment, the spiritual moment, I just came across this also in Krishna Sandarbha, where Jiva Goswami explains, he quotes the Brahma Samhita verse, Sri Akanta Kanta Paramapurusha Kalpataravo, that describes Goloka Vrindavan, where it says that not a moment passes away. And he says what that really means, he says, of course there has to be some passage, otherwise how could an activity take place? He says what it means is that one is so absorbed in every moment that one doesn't notice that there's any passage of time. It's just, you know, they have this idea, be here now, be in the moment. So spiritually, the moment is so overpowering, you might say. It's not like our minds, we're always living in the past or the future. That tends to be what we do as conditioned souls, thinking about what we did or thinking about what's going to happen or being anxiety about what's going to happen. It's very hard, just like our chanting, it's very difficult to just focus at the moment on the sound of the holy name. But the spiritual world is so absorbing of your attention that you don't notice that there's any passage of time. Of course, it's spiritual time too, so that's another thing, how it works exactly. It's hard for us to understand. So anyway, so Shukadev is speaking. Of course, he's absorbed too. There are a few places, acharyas point out, that Shukadev goes into ecstasy. He has to control himself because he's talking about Krishna, especially the 10th canto. He has to be careful because that's why he didn't reveal much about Gopi Bhava or Srimati Radharani, for example, because he thought he would just be, Pariksit Maharaj is running out of time, so he can't just go into ecstasy for days. Like we hear in Chaitanya Charitamrita, some devotees, they go for days and passed out in ecstasy. Okay, let's go on to another verse here. Now this is a famous verse actually by Prahlad Maharaj. My dear Lord, O Supreme Person, of course he's speaking to Nrisimhadev in his chapter of prayers, chapter 9 of the 7th canto. My dear Lord, O Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of my association with material desires one after another, I was gradually falling into a blind well full of snakes, following the general populace. Pretty graphic, huh? First of all, you're in a well, you can't get out, and then it's full of snakes. This is how he describes material life. But your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me as his disciple and instructed me how to achieve this transcendental position. Therefore, my first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? Now, this is, of course, in the mood of the disciple. How could I give up my spiritual master? He saved me. I was heading for a blind well full of snakes, and he saved me. So his life belongs to, or my life belongs to him. That's the disciple's mood. Prahlad Maharaj is revealing here. So now we have a different kind of relationship. O King, when Bali Maharaj lost all his opulence and died in the fight. So this is from the 8th canto, fight between the Suras and the Asuras. And Bali Maharaj actually gets killed at some point. But Shukracharya is very powerful. He brings him back to life. That's what this says. O King, when Bali Maharaj lost all his opulence and died in the fight, Shukracharya, a descendant of Bhrigu Muni, brought him back to life. Because of this, the great soul Bali Maharaj became a disciple of Shukracharya and began to serve him with great faith, offering everything he had. This is, comes at the beginning of the Vamanadeva pastime. It's interesting because, well, Shukracharya, he's actually in the Bhargava, he's in the Bhrigu dynasty. So there, you know, obviously those are the Suras, not the Asuras. But something went on there was some Shukracharya and Brihaspati, they had some falling out, and somehow or other Shukracharya ended up being the spiritual master of the demons. But he's actually in the line of Bhrigu Muni. So anyway, this explains why this relationship is there between Bali Maharaj and Shukracharya. And he was a spiritual master. He's always referred to as a spiritual master. And Bali Maharaj is considered so exceptional because he gave up everything, even the advice or the order of his spiritual master. So part of that, the point of that is that it's so extraordinary, you don't do that. But because Lord Vishnu was directly before him, begging from him, then his service is, of course, more important. So this is from the tenth canto, chapter 13. Chapter 13 is where Lord Brahma, after the the part of the Brahma Vimohan Leela, it's where Lord Brahma returns and finds that Krishna is still there with all the cowherd boys and calves. And then Krishna shows his Aishwarya, shows great opulence, showing all the Vishnus come from him and so on. So at the beginning of that chapter, actually, Pariksit Maharaj, or Shukadev Goswami says, O King, kindly hear me with great attention. Although the activities of the Supreme Lord are very confidential, no ordinary man being able to understand them, I shall speak about them to you. For spiritual masters explain to a submissive disciple even subject matters that are very confidential and difficult to understand. So here we see this is an example of the reciprocation. If the disciple is submissive, then the spiritual master is inspired to speak and reveal very confidential things. Now here, this is a little in a different direction. This is about Romaharshan. Romaharshan was a disciple of Vyasadeva. You know, in the Bhagavatam, in the first canto, it's described how Vyasadeva gave different disciples authority over different aspects of the Vedas. They were put under their control or their protection, you might say. It was their service to make sure they were maintained and the knowledge within them disseminated. And Rama Maharshan was given the Puranas to take care of, and maybe the Itihasas too. So here it says, after thus being worshipped along with his entourage, Lord Balaram accepted a seat of honor. Then he noticed that Rama Maharshan, Vyasadeva's disciple, had remained seated. So then, of course, he kills him. He says, this is what he's thinking, I guess. Yeah. Although he is a disciple of the divine sage Vyas and has thoroughly learned many scriptures from him, including the law books of religious duties and the epic histories and Puranas. Yeah, so the epics are the Itihasas. All this study has not produced good qualities in him. Rather, his study of scriptures is like an actor's studying his part. For he is not self-controlled or humble and vainly presumes himself a scholarly authority, though he has failed to conquer his own mind. So here we see, you know, the other side of it. You may be a disciple of a great soul. He's a disciple, direct disciple of Vyasadeva, who is the compiler of the Vedas. But somehow there was something wrong with his heart, and it didn't... He was not self-controlled or humble, and he just thought he was a great scholar. And so Balaram wasn't happy with the way he acted. Let's see. Well, this is part of it too. Rama Maharshan, the disciple of Vedavyas, divided the Puranas into four basic compilations. I'm not sure what the significance of the word four is here. He divided the Puranas into four basic compilations, because usually we hear about six, right? Or the three, they're divided according to the modes of material nature, those three divisions. I suppose the fourth you could say is transcendental, the Bhagavatam. Anyway, the sage Kashyapa and I, along with Savarni and Nakritavarna, a disciple of Ram, learned these four divisions. Anyway, so that's something about Rama Maharshan. So, a couple more quotes here. I don't even know why I wrote this down until I read it. My dear Lord, so this is Prithu Maharaj. Now, Prithu Maharaj had an exchange with Vishnu himself. He was performing sacrifice, and Lord Vishnu came down. Oh, this has to do with requests, asking for some benediction, going back to the first point of the Prabhupada's purport. So Prithu Maharaj says to Lord Vishnu, he's saying what he wants because Vishnu is offering him. You want some benediction. I'm so pleased with you. Actually, it says at the end, after he's spent some time with Prithu Maharaj, he's hesitant to leave. He's feeling, Lord Vishnu is feeling so happy to be in the association of Prithu Maharaj that it's hard for him to leave. So this is what Prithu Maharaj tells Lord Vishnu. My dear Lord, I therefore do not wish to have the benediction of merging into your existence. A benediction in which there is no existence of the nectarian beverage of your lotus feet. I want the benediction of at least 1,000,000 ears, for thus I may be able to hear about the glories of your lotus feet from the mouth of your pure devotees. So instead of asking for some material thing, he's asking for millions of ears to hear Krishna Katha, which of course is very pleasing to Lord Vishnu to hear such a thing. And then Dhruva Maharaj, of course, he has an amazing story. And then it's so striking that such a great devotee, he gets into trouble because he's killing these yakshas like crazy. One yaksha has killed his brother, and to take revenge, he starts slaughtering them like anything. So first Swayambhuva Manu comes, and he preaches to him because he's descendant. And then after. Dhruva Maharaj, he says, oh, okay, I'll stop. So he stops the fighting, stops killing all the yakshas. And then Kuvera, who's the lord of the yakshas, he comes and he talks to him and basically thanks him and praises him. And he says, he says something about, you're a great devotee. So it's surprising that you would act in this way. Actually, one theme that comes out in there, I think Prabhupada mentions it in a purport, although I've heard others mention it, is that it shows that a devotee even in a transcendental position like Dhruva Maharaj can show some kind of emotion like that. Well, just like Manu here, he's showing, he's a great soul, obviously. He's one of the Mahajans. But he's attached to his daughter. And he's, and actually, you'll see later, he's crying, actually, when he's leaving his daughter there. Of course, it's a pretty heavy thing. Just imagine you're just leaving your daughter in the forest with this sage. You're going back to your opulent kingdom. So, anyway, the point is there that they, you know, it's not that they, you become a stone just because you're transcendental. You actually have emotion in relationship to, and so it seems like, it may be bewildering to us. We think, wait a minute, you're supposed to just be, like Bhagavad Gita says, see, stone and gold is the same and so on. But it's different in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is so powerful that it, that these emotions become spiritualized in the context of devotional service to Krishna, in the context of the love of Krishna. They become flooded. The devotional service floods everything else. So in any case, Dhruva Maharaj, he showed something. He showed some anger, and he was killing all these yakshas. So then, when Kuvera asked him, what do you want from me? Then he's, well, this is what he says here, I think this, let's see. Well, yes, when thus asked to accept a benediction from Kuvera, Dhruva Maharaj, that most elevated pure devotee, who was an intelligent and thoughtful king, begged that he might have unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what he wanted Kuvera to give him. For thus a person can cross over the ocean of nescience very easily, although it is very difficult for others to cross. So that's his request. And then the next verse, it says, the son of Idavida, Lord Kuvera, was very pleased, and happily he gave Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he wanted. So my reaction to this was, Kuvera can do that? I didn't think Kuvera could do that. He can give, he could bless him with unflinching faith in and remembrance of the Personality of Godhead. So actually, in the word for word, I looked it up. Tam, of course, Tam is a pronoun, I think. Yeah, I think it means something like it. Because it's translated in the word for word, that remembrance, Tam, Dattva, having given. So it says that Kuvera gave him that remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Unflinching faith and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's a little something to spotlight something about Kuvera I didn't know. He's apparently a great devotee as well, and he has this power to give a kind of blessing like that to his... Actually, Dhruva Maharaj wasn't exactly his disciple, but he was hearing him submissively. And of course, he had not, and Dhruva was responding to the advice of, or the order of Swayambhuva Manu, so he appreciated that. So he was ready to give him some blessing. Okay. Sorry, I went on a little long there. So the verse again, Sabhavan duhitri sneha parikrishtatmano mama. Shrotum arhasi dinasya shavitam kripaya mune. O great sage, graciously be pleased to listen to the prayer of my humble self, for my mind is troubled by affection for my daughter. What is he? Parikrishta atmana. Mind, agitated mind. Parikrishta atmana. So, anything? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So when you were talking about Narada Muni, another similar question came to my mind. So when Krishna descends from spiritual world and he appears here, does it mean that he absent in spiritual world, or it's a duplicate? The same thing for the devotees, Radharani and the gopis. And when they come to the material world, that, does it mean that the spiritual world is empty?
Actually, no. There's a whole, in Krishna Sandarbha, there's a quite a long section there where Jiva Goswami talks about the prakat and aprakat spiritual world. So It's quite interesting, actually. I can't get into all the details, but the basic idea is whether when the gopis are in the Prakat Leela in Vrindavan on earth, they're feeling separation from Krishna. But when Krishna sent a message with Uddhava, it was actually a love letter, so it was kind of written in code. So on the surface, it has one meaning, but because the gopis saw it as a love letter, they read it in a different way. And what Krishna was actually telling them was there is no separation because we're together in the uppercut, in the transcendental abode. We're eternally together. There is no separation. So these devotees, the Krishna and his associates, they exist simultaneously. And they're associates. Also, they exist simultaneously in more than one place. So Narada Muni, my question was, does Narada Muni exist eternally and has he always existed in Vrindavan in the spiritual world? So according to this verse from the Skanda Purana, that seems to be the fact. Because we do hear, I forget where I read this, but maybe it's Jiva Goswami as well, because there are, in Vaikuntha, there are eternal associates and there are also newcomers. And maybe I shouldn't say guess, but I remember reading this and I was surprised that one or two of the newcomers, it was either Jai and, I think it was Jai and Vijay actually, that were, I can't remember for sure, so don't quote me on that, but it was someone who's some personality in Vaikuntha who we're all familiar with, who are newcomers, well, new, I don't know how long new is, trillions of years or whatever. But they weren't eternally parishads until they earned that position in Vaikuntha as personal close associates of the Lord. So, but generally speaking, everything is eternal and everything is going on eternally in the spiritual world. And I think sometimes the problem is we hear these stories, just like, somebody cursing someone else, and then they come to the material world, like Radharani's cursing, who is it, Subal or somebody, or something. It's like, wait a minute, I don't believe that. I think these stories are there for some other reason. That doesn't happen. No one in the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, is cursing someone to come to the material world. So these things, I think, it's like, give us some wrong impression. There's no that kind of thing in Goloka Vrindavan. And it's always, perfect. Everything is perfect there. Just like Krishna's pastimes in the spiritual and material world. I was thinking, I can see how a skeptic would say, oh yeah, of course. of course Krishna's going to come out on top, yeah. But that's the way it is, actually. He always does come out on top. Everything is perfect. So these things, there's no separation between Radha and Krishna. There may even be a mood of parikya bhava, but it's not like, first of all, in one sense you could say what differences it makes, but they're eternally together in the spiritual world. So the Gopi, my point, anyway, Jiva Goswami is describing how the gopis, they can go back and forth. He's telling them that. Just, if you're feeling too much separation, then just think of yourself in Goloka Vrindavan because you're there with me. You're in both places at the same time.
I remember reading in Vaishnav Tosani, there's a verse, Ballopi Bhagavan Krishna Koisharam Rupam Asrita.
Let me just tell everybody what you're talking about. Vaishnav Toshani is Sanatana Goswami's commentary on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes. That's what he's referring to. This is the source of what he's saying.
Yeah. He said when Krishna was appearing in Nanda Mother Yashoda's maternity room, in his original form, he's playing with Radharani. Simultaneously, both is going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All these things, yeah, Krishna's a little baby eternally, but he's also an adolescent. And it's also, the question comes up this also in Krishna Sandarbha, that Krishna's eternally pleasant in the abodes on earth. So Bhoma Vrindavan, Bhoma Mathura, Bhoma Dwarka. So it appears that he leaves Vrindavan and he goes to Mathura. That means he's no longer in Vrindavan. But that doesn't happen in the spiritual world. He's eternally in all three places. And in fact, it doesn't really happen in the material world either, because Krishna stays in Vrindavan, and Vasudev, his expansion, goes to Mathura and Dwarka. So Krishna is inconceivable. He can do anything he wants, so he can do all of these things simultaneously. And his associates, I've explained in a couple of recent classes, how when Krishna married all the queens, and Krishna's mother and father were naturally there, obviously it's his wedding, so there's 16,100 just Devaki and Vasudev present at the wedding, at the same, all these different places at the same time. So that, because they're part of Krishna's Swarup Shakti, that's why Krishna's inconceivable, and his parishads, his eternal associates, they're also can do amazing things. Anyway, it's all beyond us, isn't it? But it's so amazing, I think, the theology that we have. I mean, who can come even close to this idea of God? I mean, the best that any other religion on earth now, it's basically God is a creator. That's basically as far as their understanding goes. And for us, the creators, they're the Purushas. They're involved in the material world. That's nothing compared to what Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan, that's a whole, you know. They're seeing God at work, you might say, but they don't know anything about him at home. We get to see into his bedroom. We're so privileged. We hear everything about him. It's so amazing, actually. Madamati Prabhu.
You're mentioning about Kuvera and, you know, who is he to give lessons, you know. That also occurred in my mind. Another thing that about Kuvera, I thought it was surprising that here he is killing all the yakshas, yeah? He comes and thanks Dhruva Maharaj. Like, he's thanking him for stop killing, but if you really think about it, he's just killed all his people. And so, he in one sense, he would be angry, like, why did you do all this, you know? But he really, so you can see Kuvera's qualities is that he's just such an amazing personality that he comes and thanks Dhruva Maharaj.
To have that kind of forgiveness.
Sorry?
To have that kind of forgiveness in his heart.
Yeah, it was just like pretty amazing.
Well, Prabhupada says the demigods have the maximum amount of good qualities possible in the material world. He says that in one purport.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so shocking when they do something like Indra does these different things, you know. Because generally, we can't even, you know, they're so elevated. The devas are so elevated. Yeah. So yeah, he's really showing his merciful nature. He's a friend of Lord Shiva. He's described as his brother there for some reason. I don't know, in that chapter. He says a brother. He's described as a brother of Shiva. He's not actually his brother. He's his friend. Somehow he pleased Lord Shiva, so Lord Shiva stays there. Stays with him. Associates with him. He's a guest,
Another thought, comment on the earlier thing that you mentioned about Bhaktivinoda Thakur saying about the Diksha and the Siksha Guru, and he's really appreciating the Siksha Gurus. And I was thinking, if you really think about it in his personal life, you know, the Siksha, you know, what he's speaking is from his own experience, his own realization, or his, his Siksha Gurus were so much more relevant or important in his life than his.
Yeah, it's a day-to-day thing. We're in the association of Siksha Gurus, you might say. And we tend to hear from other devotees, and we get so much from that. Okay, let's stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.